Hello there. Just a quick message before we get stuck into podcast number 43. I'd like to say thank you to one of our listeners, Jeffrey Walker, for making a donation to keep the Dad's Army podcast going. All donations received do get ploughed straight back into the production costs of the show. And if you'd like to make a donation, then you can click the donate button on our homepage, which is dadsarmypodcast.com.
If you think we're on the run.
Hello and welcome to podcast number 43. 43 sounds really old, doesn't it?
It certainly does, actually. it's a grand year for the podcast.
As you can tell, I'm joined once again by Oliver. Hello, Oliver.
Hello, James. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oliver joins me for the first regular podcast, I think. Yeah. You've always featured in the past where we've done specials and we've reviewed particular episodes, talked about your documentary. So this is the first time you get to go through the news and go through the amazing amounts of feedback we've received this time.
And I'm looking forward to doing so enormously. It's going to be good fun.
It's been quite a few months since we've gone through the news on the podcast, and there's been quite a lot happening, really, over the last couple of months. First of all, though, what I'd like to talk about briefly is the amount of times Dad's Army featured on television over the Christmas period. Now, Dad's Army is always on over Christmas, in one form or another, and this year was no different. We had Wake Up Warmington, and that was on the 18th of December, shortly followed, the day after, by my brother and I. And then, of course, the movie gets its annual outing.
Absolutely. We've got to have a movie on over Christmas.
Absolutely. And then there was The Love of Three Oranges. That was on Christmas Eve. And, of course, Christmas Day, Turkey Dinner.
Which was actually in the Radio Times. It said in the blurb, Captain Mannering prepares a special Christmas dinner. Which obviously wasn't Christmas dinner in this plot at all, but yeah, that is in the Radio Times.
I had I'm trying to remember who it was now, but I had a conversation with someone about the thing we spoke about when we were commentating on that particular episode. And I think it was Paul from the Appreciation Society, and he seemed to think that some researcher goes through all of the Dad's Armies trying to find a reference to Christmas, and they get as far as Turkey Dinner and assume that it's about Christmas without actually watching it, and that's the reason why it's become the unofficial Christmas episode.
Absolutely.
I like that theory.
Yeah, I guess it's close.
I wonder if it's true. Incidentally, I don't know if you've seen, Oliver, but there were several articles in the national media over the Christmas period referring to how bad television was this particular year, and that there was very few new and original programmes, possibly with the exception of Doctor Who. And there were lots of criticisms of the fact that Dad's Army was on so much.
Yeah, well, I work on a BBC Two show, Something of a Weekend, and I had to do a pre-recorded Christmas special to pick out the best of Christmas telly. And when my producer asked me, well, come on, what's on primetime BBC over on Christmas Day? And I said, Dad's Army. And couldn't believe it. The Good Life got an enormous amount of television over Christmas. But people sit down and enjoy it. And for people who aren't like ourselves, who watch it regularly and who do dip in and out of it, I think it's a bit of a Christmas treat for people. And it's a wonderful trip down memory lane. But I think I'm right, the recolorized episode last Christmas got 3.1 million, so it pulls in the punters from BBC Two, much more than some of the new shows do.
I think there's quite a good mix, usually, of television on over Christmas, and they always go with a few nostalgia trips, and I think that's when Dad's Army always gets repeated. But there were quite a few brand new episodes of current popular TV shows, and I don't see what all the fuss is about. I think it's a good balance between new and old, and personally I would quite happily sit there and watch The Good Life and Dad's Army any day of the week. I'm never going to get excited about a Christmas edition of Gavin and Stacey, I'm afraid. So it's very popular, I concede that, but it's just not my cup of tea.
Well, this Christmas was interesting because we had, you know, Victoria Wood coming back, Delia Smith did a new show, you know. There are old favourites doing new things. There are new shows, Outnumbered. There's a bit of a cult following. I must admit, I watched that and didn't find it particularly funny.
I love that.
I do. Some of the shows I like, people say, are predictable, but I found that a little bit predictable. But I like the idea of it and like the format. Maybe I dipped in at the wrong time. but I think there's a fair amount of decent telly over the Christmas period.
No, I agree with
you. But I'm pleased that Dad's Army is still a staple of our Christmas television.
There was one particular journalist who suggested there ought to be a ban on Dad's Army for at least a couple of years. So I think that just shows the diversity of opinion. You have some people saying it's the absolute pinnacle of the Christmas agenda, and others saying, oh, I don't want to see Dad's Army over Christmas ever again.
Yeah.
So, quite interesting, really. Anyway, moving on, we reported on a podcast a little while ago that the touring stage play is returning, and that's starting in March 2010. It's going all over the country. They're performing four new episodes of Dad's Army. That's Branded, Mum's Army, The Two and a Half Feathers, and Keep Young and Beautiful.
Some good episodes in there.
I think they may have gone for the best ones. When you consider that they've already done The Deadly Attachment and two of the three missing episodes,
yes.
I wonder if they go around for a third tour, if they're actually going to be able to pick out any really well-known episodes. But anyway, they're starting off at the beginning of March at the Gordon Craig Theatre in Stevenage, and that's where they kicked off the first Dad's Army tour as well. And then they're moving on to the Connaught Theatre in Worthing, then on to the Palace Theatre in Southends, the Mercury Theatre in Colchester, the Grimsby Auditorium, strangely in Grimsby, the York Grand Opera House, the Queen's Theatre in Barnstaple, the Everyman Theatre in Cheltenham, which I think they visited in the first run as well, the Devonshire Park Theatre in Eastbourne, the Belgrade Theatre in Coventry, Key Theatre in Peterborough, Bristol Hippodrome, the Civic Theatre in Chelmsford, and that's one that I've got tickets for, and the Capitol in Horsham, and they're finishing up in Fernham Hall in Fareham. Have you got any plans to go and see this adaption this time around?
York, I used to live in York, so it would be quite nice to go and see it up there. I've still got friends up there. So that would be quite... I'm just loving the way they've decided to go from York to Barnstaple. to go up north, go south. You know, they've got a fair bit of travelling to do. But it's nice that it's being spread out about some of the best theatres in the country. I understand Leslie Grantham's coming back.
That's right.
Is Peter Martin back as Mannering?
I don't know. Peter Martin was replaced halfway through the last run by Timothy Kightley. And if you read some of these theatres' web pages, it does say that Timothy Kightley is reprising his role. But Caliber, who's the theatre company who are producing these plays, have not confirmed and haven't published anywhere who's playing Mannering. So I would have thought, I mean, where are we now? At the beginning of January, they would have cast him by now. I would imagine they would have cast pretty much all of the major parts by now.
Yes.
But if you want to go on to Caliber's website, the address you need is www.caliberproductions.co.uk, and you can click on, have a look at all the tour locations, and I think they've got links to the direct theatres there as well.
Good news is that the Bressingham 2010 details have been announced. Quite exciting. It's going on in June, over a weekend of the 20th and the 21st.
I think it's the 20th and 21st. Now, I haven't got a diary in front of me, so I may be wrong, but I think the 20th is a Saturday, and that's the day of the Dad's Army Appreciation Members' Meal. And the following day will be the normal day at Bressingham. We won't go into too many details here because we don't have them with us, so we don't want to mislead you. But this is the 10th Bressingham event, hence the reason why they're going to town a little bit this time. And if you want to find out precise details rather than hearing Oliver and I guess what they are, then the best thing to do is to go on to the Dad's Army Appreciation Society website, which is dadsarmy.co.uk. You do get preferential rates if you are a member, and they are putting on a couple of special things this time around. I think they're putting on their own adaptation of a couple of episodes as well, and the scripts have been adapted to try and incorporate Thetford
right
into the actual stories as well. So it's a bit of a celebration, really, of Thetford's history with Dad's Army as yeah. well. So, but that's something to look forward to in about 6 months' time.
Fantastic.
Incidentally, this is connected, really. Those individuals who have been to Dad's Army Appreciation Society's events at both Thetford and Bressingham in the past may have attended
Checkers
Pub, which was a venue used for the members' meal on two occasions. I think I went along to one. It was a fantastic pub, had a huge marquee out the back. And unfortunately, it's burnt to the ground. There was some kind of electrical fault a few months ago. And if you've been there and you were hoping that you were going to return at some point, then unfortunately you won't be. Unfortunately, I think it's damaged beyond repair. They have no plans, I think, to rebuild it. We've received a bit of audio feedback, which is particularly useful, being an audio podcast. And this is from Dave Homewood. Those of you who have been on the Dad's Side Me scene for a little while may recognise Dave's name. He was very involved in the Appreciation Society whilst he lived in England. He then moved to New Zealand and set up the New Zealand branch of the Dad's Side Me Appreciation Society. And I think I'll let him describe the kind of things that he used to get up to when he was involved in fandom. Over to you, Dave.
Hello, listeners. This is Dave Homewood from New Zealand. Some of you will know me already, but for those of you who don't, I'll introduce myself. I live in New Zealand, and I have been a devoted fan of Dad's Army since 1985 when I was 14 and I'd first discovered the series in reruns on Television New Zealand. I've been collecting episodes since then in photographs, and in the late 1980s, I made contact with a few of the people involved, including Bill Pertwee and Jimmy Perry. And in 1990, thanks to Bill Pertwee, he put me onto the Dad's Army Appreciation Society, and I became the first ever member of the first Dad's Army Appreciation Society that had been created by David Lovering. But unfortunately, that whole venture failed after the first magazine, and it wasn't until 1993 that Bill Pertwee got the society going again, with Taj Muldoon at the helm, and I joined up once again. And from then on, I sort of was a devoted member of the society. In March 1995, I established the Dad's Army Appreciation Society New Zealand branch, which basically recruited New Zealand fans and was designed initially to get them to join up with the British society, but it turned out that there were so many fans here in New Zealand, they wanted their own society, and from April 1995, publishing a separate newsletter for the separate club, and that was called Platoon Attention. It was quite a popular little magazine. It was a quarterly, just like the UK DAAS's Permission to Speak, Sir. And the two magazines complemented each other very well, so a lot of members ended up joining both societies and getting two magazines every quarter, each with different content, of course. And we ended up with members from all over the world in the Dad's Army Appreciation Society New Zealand branch, particularly in New Zealand, but we had a number of Australians, we had a couple of Americans, there was one guy in Africa, there was one guy even in Germany, and there was a lot of people in the UK, thanks to people like Maurice Tondelier and Roger Partridge, who ran the New Zealand office for the UK. We ended up having a few get-togethers here in New Zealand, annual sort of get-together called the Big Parade, and those were very popular. One of them, we even got Stephen Lowe, Arthur's son, along, because he lives here in New Zealand. But unfortunately, after almost 10 years of existence, the New Zealand branch had to come to an end. I didn't do anything for a couple years, but then last year I sort of got back into the world of Dad's Army with a new venture. I run a website which is really about the Royal New Zealand Air Force. I was in the Air Force myself, and I've been recording histories and that sort of thing. As a section to this website, I now have a Dad's Army tribute section. You can find this website, it's www.cambridgeairforce.org.nz. That's all one word, Cambridge Air Force. On that homepage, if you roll down, there's a link to the Dad's Army section. Hopefully James will put a link up on his site as well. On that little tribute site is a lot of information that I collected while I was running the Dad's Army Appreciation Society New Zealand branch. There's information that was never published as well, but it's all interesting stuff to fans. So, and there's interviews up there with cast members, there's old articles, and as I say, stuff that was never published, like the timeline. I've got a very extensive timeline, which I use just for my own reference, but you may find it really, really interesting, because a lot of fans have. And also attached to that Dad's Army section is a link to a forum which I run, where people from all around the world can discuss Dad's Army. We have a lot of fans on there from all over the place, and it'd be really good if you guys can join in and take part in that. Well, that's probably about all the time I've got. I've probably taken longer than I should have. Thanks to James for allowing me to speak, being a good opportunity. And I hope to be back in a future podcast with a bit more specific information. I think the next one I might talk about how I helped discover a lost episode. Thanks.
Well, the Dad's Army podcast has received a lot of feedback in my last couple of months, so James and I are going to go through some of these. And I'm delighted to say that the first one I'm going to read comes all the way from Texas in the USA, from Richard Veit. Hello, James. I am writing to you from my home in Texas. I discovered your podcast today and have listened to a couple of them with great enjoyment. My awareness of Dad's Army is of recent vintage, having come upon the program quite by accident. I manage a website for the British dramatic series A Family at War, and I'm very interested in the British home front. One UK member in my A Family at War discussion group recommended me to the sitcom Goodnight Sweetheart, and I purchased the entire DVD set. Among the extra features therein are interviews with series creators Maurice Gran and Lawrence Marks, who refer to Dad's Army several times. That aroused my curiosity, so I bought the Dad's Army DVD set. I loved it, and now have become a member of the Dad's Army Appreciation Society. Mm-hmm. By the way, both of those other two series have a connection to Dad's Army. James Beck appears in one of the A Family at War episodes. It is a dramatic role, and he performs it splendidly. In Goodnight Sweetheart, Gary Sparrow travels back in time to Swallow's Bank and meets lookalikes of George Mannering, Arthur Wilson, and Frank Pike. Keep up the good work. I look forward to your next podcast. And that's from Richard in Robinson, Texas, USA.
Wonderful. Thank you, Richard, for that. A Family at War, I haven't heard of before. But Goodnight Sweetheart, yeah, it's probably the only program that spans my two favourite genres, which is sci-fi and kind of historic dramas, comedy, really, and yeah. I think it's a really, really good series, and the episodes in which they do a parody of Dad's Army is very funny. Have you seen that?
I actually saw it when you and I met at the BFI do, back in December 2008. And they showed it. It's quite a difficult... I didn't even know about that before I watched it. So it was an almost quite... It was nice to see Terence Hardiman, better known as the Demon Headmaster, who is also going to be a villain in the new Doctor Who series, you might be interested to know. Playing Wilson, Alec Linster did his best with Mannering, but it's so... I don't know. It would feel so wrong, you know, to replace original actors. But, I mean, it was a nice touch to a series, but I don't know, another comedy series cashing in off another comedy series is not personally my thing, but it was a nice homage to the series. Yeah. But all the same, it's very good of Richard to get in touch, and great to hear his comments.
No, absolutely. I think it's great to hear from listeners from the other side of the Atlantic, and I'd encourage anyone else, if you're listening to this and you're in the United States, then please do get in touch. We've had a couple of people, strangely both based in Texas, get in touch with us. Anyway, the feedback continues. Gareth Kays, who is emailing us from Australia. Hi, James. There's a slight error on the latest podcast. It Sticks Out Half a Mile was originally going to have Wilson and Mannering, as in the pilot. The Warden and Pike were the replacements. My favourite part of the episode is where Miss Perkins describes Mannering to Wilson and vice versa. Absolute classic. As well as the initial reintroductions to each other. And yes, Jones can be very irritating at times. My wife Sonia will also agree, so that makes four of us. Now, there's a couple of things I want to pick up on there. First of all, Gareth is referring to a podcast that we recorded and released all the way back, I think, in August last year.
Wow.
Where I touched on It Sticks Out Half a Mile, and because I was so new to it, I didn't know anything about it, and I think I posed the question, I wonder why they had Wilson instead of Mannering, and then I found out later on that there were slight complications with
that. Yes, sadly.
Yeah, indeed. Yes, it's something that I would have loved to have heard, which would have been a whole series featuring Mannering and Wilson. I think that would have been really, really good, and I think the series would have been better for it. And secondly, we talk about the Jones thing, and as I've mentioned in the past, I get loads of feedback telling me off for being so rotten to poor old Jones, and as a result of that, I've decided to do some kind of Jones focused episode in the near future, and that will give Jones a fair hearing.
Yeah.
I will get someone else on the podcast who actually likes Jones slightly more than me. and I will put my case, and they will put their case, and that will be it.
I think you might need the help of his armoured van to get you through the feedback on that one.
We shall see.
Well, we have a very nice email from Shane, who's 15. Dear James, I'm 15 years old and have been watching Dad's Army since I was 7. I recently searched Dad's Army into iTunes and came across a podcast. Like any true Dad's Army fan, I immediately subscribed to it. I have to say, I was amazingly surprised at how good it was. I was ecstatic to see that there are people that share my love for Dad's Army. And I agree with you about Jones, and his fooling around and overreacting can sometimes get annoying. However, Jones's chemistry of Captain Mannering and Sergeant Wilson is amazing. Mm. I love all the characters in Dad's Army, particularly Private Walker, portrayed beautifully by James Beck, as I think his relationship with the other members of the platoon is out of this world, and he never fails to make me smile, and I think James Beck himself is an underappreciated gem. Could you possibly tell me what Bill Pertwee's book is called, as I would love to read it? As for the podcast, I love it. And if there's anything you need or want help with, I'd be more than happy to help.
Okay. Well, let's take those points in reverse order. First of all, MP3 feedback, Shane. That would be one of the things that's incredibly helpful. So if you can record some of your thoughts about Dad's Army, I'd love to feature them on the show. But moving backwards then, let's talk about the relationship between Mannering and Wilson. And I think you're absolutely right there, Shane. The whole magic of Dad's Army is based on relationships, and it is predominantly the relationship between Mannering and Wilson. You've got the class differential, which I've referred to many, many times, but it doesn't stop there. It's the relationship between the other characters, and you've got Pike and Jones, as we've touched on before, and towards the end of the series, you've got Godfrey and Jones also, particularly in the last episode. You see some of the relationships there really becoming quite mature. And I think that's the basis of its success.
And as you touched upon Jones's chemistry with Mannering and Wilson, I think my favourite line would have to be when Jones tells a story and gets it a little bit lost, and Mannering turns to Wilson, I suppose there'll have to come a time where he'll have to go. Which I think is a wonderful line.
He never did, though.
No, he didn't. He stayed.
But I think I ought to say, because I haven't said it for a long time, I do like all the characters in Dad's Army, including Jones. I just don't think he was as well thought out as the rest of the characters. And as I say, we'll talk about Jones in a little bit more detail in a future podcast.
Bill Pertwee's book, he's just recently released a new volume, hasn't he, of a book, which is updated, I believe, with all the latest Dad's Army shenanigans. And it can be found in all good bookstores. What's it called?
It's called The Making of a Television Legend.
That's right.
I believe it is, yes. I was wondering when you were going to get to that.
Yeah.
No, thank you very much indeed, Shane, for your email. They're great to hear from you. Moving on, we've had an email from Andrew Mould. Dear Sir James. There's a reason for that as well, which I won't go into now, but carry on calling me sir. As I said, it doesn't happen very often. Thank you for podcast number 38, another enjoyable 25 minutes listening to you talk about Dad's Army. Keep it up. I was really interested to hear you talk about It Stands Out Half a Mile. I think it sticks out half a mile. Set in 1948. It gives a wonderful impression of what happened next after Dad's Army. I was a little confused as to your description for the original pilot episode, as it did contain Arthur Lowe and John LeMessurier. Indeed, the reunion is quite touching, with a fair portion of pathos, probably not unlike when people were reunited years after the war. I'm not 100% convinced with Captain Mannering's job after the war, though. A Swiss clock salesman, a little poetic license, I think? Carry on with the wonderful podcasts. Now, the only episode, Andy, that I haven't heard of It Sticks at Half a Mile is the pilot episode. So I can't comment particularly on the reunion between Mannering and Wilson. Have you heard it, Ollie?
No, I didn't actually know it still existed, which is quite, you know, I would really love to hear that. I just wonder whether, I mean, obviously, sadly, John and Arthur died not long afterwards, but I just wonder whether, like in recent times with Miranda going from radio to television, Whether that radio spin-off might have become a series on television in its own right, I guess it's one of them things, sadly, we will never know. But it would be very, very interesting to hear that.
Well, the thing is, you never know what the future may have been, really. And if you look at certain things, even like Dead Ringers in more recent times, that's made a transition from radio to TV. So who knows? Had it been incredibly successful, I'm sure it would have at least been considered. But going back to your point there, Andy, in terms of what happened after the war with the characters and how convincing it was, I think it kind of succeeded. The person or the character who benefited out of the whole 10 episodes or 12 episodes, if it sticks out, was the Warden. Because he wasn't a caricature anymore, and he was always a kind of appendage to the TV series rather than the main character. He was very shouty, he didn't have a great deal of character development compared to the main cast, whereas he did within It Sticks Out Half a Mile, and it was done in a believable way, and you got to see how Bill Pertwee can act a little bit more seriously at times than he demonstrated within Dad's Army itself. Pike, however, suffered. Because he hadn't moved on at all. It was identical. There was a clear move forward for Pertwee and or for the Warden. And I think almost the same is true of Wilson as well. And I think Lemessurier was able to portray an advancement and a sense of the character moving on slightly better than Ian Lavender. But it is certainly worth having a listen to if you haven't heard It Sticks Out Half a Mile. It is an official sequel to Dad's Army after all. And I would suggest that you try and get hold of it at least once and give it a listen. So see what you think. Thank you very much, Andy.
And the next email is from Ian Badham in Gloucestershire. Hi, James. I always look forward to your excellent Dad's Army podcasts, always interesting and informative. Just thought I'd write to say, in my opinion, Dad's Army is so much more than what appears on the surface. Years ago, although I had an affection for the show, having seen it on the TV during my childhood, in the 70s and 80s, I still couldn't see why it was regarded as a classic it so clearly is. Having now watched all of the episodes, I can see just what a classic it really is. It has at its core such a subtle touch of genius in the way the characters interact with each other. All of the characters are so well drawn and the acting is superb. The beauty of Dad's Army is that children can watch it and laugh without getting too much into the characters, whilst adults can gain so much more from the subtle mannerisms and characterisations. It is up there now with my top TV comedies of all time. It is worthy of your hard work and effort in producing your podcast for it, and also the great work that the DAAS do, of which I am now a proud member.
Uh-huh.
Kind regards. Keep up the great work. Ian.
Terrific. Thanks very much indeed. And I think, in all honesty, in about six or seven lines, Ian summarised why I like Dad's Army.
Totally. The image I got in my head reading Ian's email there, talking about the subtle mannerisms and characterisations, is the scene between John Laurie and John Lemessurier outside the church in the episode where Wilson's daughter says goodbye to him. And Fraser and Wilson have that wonderful moment outside the church, which the kids probably would have got bored with, but the adults would have been thinking, wow, what fantastic actors and what amazing writing to give them such a wonderful scene. And particularly for Fraser in that scene, the one who's always sarky and taking the mick out of them all or calling him a fool, brilliantly performed by John Laurie. You know, where he says he won't tell a soul, and it's a really touching moment. So I'm absolutely in. You've summed up why I like Dad's Army, as I'm sure many of the listeners of the podcast like it too. So thanks very much for emailing.
No, I agree. You were talking about getting the bird there, that particular episode, which is one of my favourite moments as well.
Yes.
And you can see the way Perry and Croft write. They'll drop something in right at the very beginning of a script, and they'll use it at the end of the script. And it makes perfect sense, and you feel sometimes you come complete circle. You can see how the story's been drafted and written. And if you look at some modern TV today, I can't see why certain scenes are kept in the edit, because they're completely pointless. It might be a beautiful moment between two or three characters, but it doesn't actually do anything apart from make you think, well, what wonderful actors they are. And it doesn't move the story on. Mm. So that's one of the things that I think is fantastic about Dad's Army, and getting the bird absolutely proves that, you know, very, very convincingly. Wonderful. Thank you very much indeed, Ian. Moving on, as I said, we've got loads of feedback here. We've had feedback from, October, I think it is. So we've got quite a few messages to go through. This is from James White Aldworth. Hi, James. Thanks for the mention on Podcast 39. I'm halfway through right now, and I thought I would let you know the David Niven film you referred to was A Matter of Life and Death by Powell and Pressburger. These seem to be Croft and Perry's favourite directors, as they appeared quite a few times on the list I sent you. Now, James sent me a list that chronicled every single film reference within Dad's Army. Yeah. And it's something, James, that I haven't forgotten about, and I intend to publish on the blog. But I think I think you were present, actually, Oliver, on that particular podcast. We referred to one scene, and I think you said that it was a scene with David Niven in it, and we didn't know what film it was. So,
thank
you very much, James, for that. He continues actually with slightly different direction. I agree about the Pike and Jones scenes. Always enjoyable and a clever solution to the Walker problem. Now that's interesting, because I hadn't clocked before I had read this piece of feedback that the Pike and Jones scenes came after Walker had left the series.
There was a much more natural relationship, I think, between Jonesy and Walker. Walker had something to offer Jonesy, whether it was rabbits or whatever, you know. He couldn't really offer anything to Pike, and Pike had nothing really to offer to Jonesy except to be the youth to listen to Jonesy's experience and not do an Arthur and look at the camera and look amazingly bored, you know. I take the point there that James has brought up, that there was a much more natural relationship, I think, between Jimmy Beck and Clive's characters.
Yeah. James continues, as I recall, Pike often having scenes with Walker, and Walker led him astray and used him as a lookout. And Walker also had lots of scenes with Jones, as Jones got duped into Walker's money-making plots. I'm not so sure he was duped. I think he was a willing collaborator in quite a few of Walker's little schemes. Walker seemed the common thread between many members of the platoon, and the solution of pushing Jones and Pike together and increasing Fraser's scenes, especially with Godfrey, was a very clear solution to a possible series-ending disaster. I think, in all fairness, James has put a little bit more thought into this than I would have done. But I do think you're right. Walker does seem to be ever-present in the episodes that he was in terms of the character pieces. So maybe he was a useful kind of, piece of glue, if you know what I mean, way of bringing characters together.
I think he was a character that people at home probably could identify with probably the most. He was the cheeky Cockney. If Fraser's sending Jonesy to sleep to remember where he put the money up the turkey or the chicken, whatever it was, Jonesy's Walker's there. It's, it's working. You know, he's the one the audience can really relate to, I think.
I think you're absolutely right. I think Walker is the most grounded member of the platoon. And where characters like Jones or Pike get caught up in the absolute lunacy of the situation that they find themselves in, you've got Walker's the one who's making a really exasperated kind of face, putting his head in his hands, kind of saying, what, you can't be serious. Yeah. So he's almost a window for the audience to look through. I remember a friend of mine once said that they believed Walker to be the most intelligent member of the platoon.
I think if Jimmy Beck had lived, I think Walker would have had his own series, to be fair. He did have his own agenda. He knew what it was all about, you know. With the one in the coffin, and they're trying to break into the house, Walker's doing gags while everyone else is flapping about the situation. He's never really worried. He's doing gags, you know. But he was much more grounded, absolutely. He never seemed over the top, you know. He was being cheeky, but he wasn't being over the top.
Oh, I agree. I think Walker is certainly a very important character, and he makes a number of episodes work, and he does it in a subtle way sometimes. Anyway, let's carry on.
This one directly relates to a commentary we did together. This is from John Pettifer, who says, I have just listened to your podcast number Engage, in which it is stated Arnold Ridley was not present. Since rewatching this episode, I believe he was in the cast. Furthermore, IMDb credits him as appearing in this episode and also in Never Too Old. I enjoy listening to your podcast and wish they were every week. I have tried to find podcasts reviewing Last of a Summer Wine, but to no avail. Thanks, Mr. J. Pettifer. Well, I think we were referring to the fact that Arnold didn't appear in any of the location scenes in Number Engaged. He was, of course, in the episode, in studio scenes, but I believe James pointed out that Arnold wasn't in any of the location scenes for the final series of Dad's Army. IMDb is one to watch. They make up all kinds of crazy stuff.
You're quite right. It's the same. It suffers from the same kind of problems Wikipedia does. It's a fantastic idea, but anyone can update it.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff you can find on Wikipedia is hilarious.
Yes.
It really is. But thanks very much indeed for your email, John. I wish I had the time to produce weekly podcasts, but I'm not entirely certain I'd have enough to say about Dad's Army every week. And I think it would be the quickest way for me to get a divorce.
Would you want to do a podcast on Last of the Summer Wine, James?
I would rather watch paint dry. I mean, I've said it before, Last of the Summer Wine, I'm afraid, is not my favourite programme. Whilst I appreciate John's quest in trying to find a podcast for it, then I wish him the best of luck, but it ain't going to come from me. Right, we'll move on. We've had an email from Rachel. Hi, James. Really enjoying the podcast. I finally listened to all the episodes and caught up, which is quite impressive because there's nearly 50 episodes out there.
That's a hell of a feat. Yeah.
Well, this is number 43, and there's been quite a few specials as well. So congratulations, Rachel. I'm surprised you haven't bored yourself silly. I especially enjoyed all of the interviews with Frank Williams. Yeah, quite understand that. I love interviewing Frank. I love speaking to him. He's always very, very good value. I'm from Australia and I'm 15 years old. My father loves many British comedies, so that's how I first became a fan of Dad's Army at 3 a.m. in the morning. But that's another story. Intriguing.
Absolutely.
I agree that one great thing about Dad's Army is its wide appeal. Once when relatives came over for a family gathering, two of my cousins, both under 10, were awfully energetic, and I tried to appease them by putting on a DVD. Whilst I thought about cartoons they could watch, they found Dad's Army and excitedly told me that they loved it. I was surprised to see them grin and giggle all the way through at least 3 episodes. Soon others joined in, and we ended up having a small crowd with an age range of 5 to 65.
Wonderful.
Unfortunately, I haven't had as much luck with friends my own age. I've only convinced one of them to watch it, and one was against it as soon as I said 1970s. Love the podcast. Keep up the great work, Rachel. Thank you, Rachel. That's a fantastic email. It is interesting because there's an awful lot of preconception about old television, especially amongst people who haven't seen it
yes.
in the past. And Dad's Army does have a massively wide appeal. I think you're always going to get a couple of people who say, this is not my cup of tea, I don't like this. And I think that's perfectly fine, perfectly normal. Most people, I think it's true to say most people appreciate some of the humour within Dad's Army. And I do think it's fascinating the way it spans the age range that it does.
Well, Frank's continually delighted as to how many younger viewers. And we've had two people write in here who are 15, which is fantastic that it's still reaching. I got into Dad's Army at a very young age with the repeats, probably when I was about 6 or 7. That's when I first saw it. And it does have that wonderful appeal where it is silly. That is, in fairness, where Jonesy comes in, because the kids love Jonesy. My very first episode was Time on My Hands. That's the first one I saw, and he's riding out on that horse or whatever it is on the clock tower.
And
I still remember watching it. So.
Do you know, that is one episode that I Paul Carpenter and I tried to review that, and we did it. We had to do it 3 times due to technical problems with Skype. And by the end of that recording, I never wanted to see Time on My Hands ever again.
I can imagine.
And I absolutely adore the radio version of it, but of course the whole finale is different.
Right.
And because it's very visual. And anyway, I'm waffling on now, so let's move on.
Yes, this is an email from Nick. Hello, James. What a good podcast 40 is. Nicholas Ridley is very good. Can't wait to hear the Vicar one. Is that the DVD on Frank, which will hopefully be for sale through the DAAS? I've now got that Heidi High Urang Milord book to read. Some stuff on Jimmy's days in working in holiday camps. Keep up the good work, Nick. Well, I'm probably the best person to field this, actually.
I think you're probably right.
Yes, I produced and edited Dad's Army and Beyond, the Frank Williams story. It is something that will hopefully be coming out. We're waiting for the best sort of technology to be available. I want it, you know, to do it justice. It was something I made at university and have subsequently had the privilege of being able to do on better technology, better editing suites and all that kind of stuff. So it will be coming in the near future. I know it's been something that's been promised for quite a while. But we are on the case, and I'm very, very grateful for your interest, Nick. We will certainly keep you posted. And please do, if you're interested in things, I mean, that Dad's Army and Beyond talks about. Dad's Army and Beyond is all about Frank and also his work after Dad's Army. The best place for you to get a teaser of what the documentary will contain and for lots of clips of Frank is on his YouTube page. It's youtube.com/user/FrankWilliamsTV. You'll see lots of classic clips of Frank on there, as well as brand new clips of a very, very, very talented actor. So please check it out and send us your comments.
Now, if you do manage to log on to that particular page, then do leave some comments as well. I mean, there's quite a few comments on there already. When I logged on and started looking at the different kind of productions and different styles of programs that Frank has been in, you know, some of which very recently, it really does help you appreciate how diverse an actor he is. And I also think he must be the only member of the Dad's Army cast with a YouTube page. So he's a really with it vicar, really, isn't he?
Oh, he's number one.
Okay, moving on. We have got an email from Ian Hall. I had the privilege of meeting Ian, you know. He was at the Vicar and Chips event.
Oh, that's great.
Yes, he was sporting a moustache. He was growing it for charity, so he told me, but I don't believe him.
Oh,
so.
No. There are a few people at work doing that. I can't grow a moustache. It doesn't work.
Well, so. I'm nearly 40 and I can't grow a moustache. So, yes, anyway, just jealousy. Anyway, Ian says, just finished listening to episode 40 of the podcast on my drive home from work tonight and would like to enter the competition to win Nicholas Ridley's book. My answer is Sergeant Wilson. Now, there's been lots of entries to that competition. I'm not reading all of them out because they don't all contain comments. But we'll be drawing that competition on the next podcast. Keep listening to find out whether or not you've won a signed copy of Godfrey's Ghost. Ian continues, right, my wife has gone out for the evening, so it's my chance to listen to episode 39 whilst watching Number Engaged. looking forward to Vicar and Chips on Saturday. It should be fun. So that shows you how long ago Ian sent in that that email.
Well, we've got an email here from Trevor Cass, and he says, hi, James, this is my second email to you this year. Which, of course, was now last year.
Oh, there you go.
I just had to write to let you know how much I enjoyed the latest podcast featuring your interview with Nicholas Ridley. I felt your questioning was pitched absolutely at the right level and resulted in a fascinating set of insights from Mr. Ridley Jr. I would also add that these were related in such a delightfully intimate and informative style that listening to them was a real joy. It left me wondering whether he had followed his father into a literary career. Although I have a number of books relating to Arthur Lowe, John Lemez and Clive Dunn, without having listened to this interview, I am not sure I would have bought Godfrey's Ghost. However, now having ordered a copy, I am eagerly anticipating its arrival. Many thanks for your fine work in producing the DA podcast. Long may it continue. With kind regards and best wishes to you and your family for a very happy Christmas and a peaceful and safe new year. Trevor.
Thank you very much indeed, Trevor. Now, Trevor sent in another email which we haven't got here with us. We'll go through that in a future podcast. But he's written a review of Godfrey's Ghost. And it is one of the most, well, I would say it's one of the more interesting books that I've read about Dad's Army. And that's because Nicholas is so far removed from Dad's Army.
Yes.
Whereas pretty much everyone else has written an autobiography was fairly central to it. And so therefore you get a real insight into what it was like growing up with Arnold. He's got some quite unique stories, really. But the book has caused quite a bit of controversy. It was reported in the Daily Mail recently, and it received quite a lot of negative feedback because it's so honest. And Nicholas has made it very clear where he thinks his father went wrong in certain places, either business decisions, or he talks about what he was like with his money and doesn't always say that he handled it the best way. And some people, I think, are probably interpreting the openness as hostility or, you know, slight unhappiness with the way that Arnold led his life. And I don't think that is a correct interpretation, particularly having met Nicholas. He just wants to paint as clear and open a picture of the man who was Arnold Ridley, the best he can possibly remember. And given that Nicholas was Arnold's only son, there really is no one else better to do it. He has taken into account stories from Arnold's former colleagues, his actor friends, his agents and so on. And I think he's just posted a very, very frank account of Arnold's life. But I would encourage everybody to take a read of it. And by all means, send your comments into the podcast. I'd be very interested to hear what you think of the book, and we will go through Trevor's comments that he sent me in a future podcast. We received another email from Ian Hall. This is at a different point, and this was after he'd been to see the Vicar and Chips event. He said, "Hi James, just thought I'd drop you a line to say I really enjoyed the Vicar and Chips evening on Saturday, as did my brother and friends. I thought the evening went really well. Frank was on excellent form and the interviews were good and the fish and chips were really tasty. Obviously, there were the initial sound issues, but to be honest, you could still make out a lot of the dialogue, so it wasn't like it was unintelligible. But I guess my ears are a little younger than most there, which probably helped. Anyway, that was all sorted for the second part. The PA was clear as a bell at all times, although Frank didn't seem to need it. Looking forward to future events. Hopefully the weather will be better then. I thought the Dad's Army cast were always blessed with fantastic weather when they strayed out of the studio. Maybe that only applies to trips to Norfolk. Thanks again for a great evening. Already looking forward to the next podcast." I have to admit, the Vicar and Chips evening was absolutely appalling weather, wasn't it?
The weather was a disgrace. Yeah. I couldn't believe it.
We should have invited David Croft.
You'd have brightened up.
Yeah, it was bad. But no, I'm really glad you enjoyed the evening, Ian. In terms of future events, I've got a couple of things in the pipeline at the moment, but absolutely nothing concrete at the moment. And I think we're almost at the bottom of our mailbag, aren't we, Oliver?
Yes, we've got one more here. This is from Alan. And it says, "James, first of all, I must say that having listened to every episode of your podcast, but now that they seem so professional and polished, I am most impressed. I believe the answer to the question posed is Wilson. And hope I am right, as I would love to read this book. Best regards, Alan."
Thank you, Alan. Alan's a long-time listener, and he's been keeping in contact with us more or less since we started.
Fantastic.
So it's great that you're still with us, Alan, and thank you for your entry as well. We won't tell you whether or not you're right yet.
No, we'll leave you waiting.
Yes, you'll have to wait and see. Professional and polished, I'm not too sure about that. It depends how much you've had to drink, I think. But thank you very much, absolutely everybody who sent in feedback. I really do appreciate it. To be honest, it's really encouraging to see physical evidence of our listener numbers out there. And it's wonderful that you seem to be enjoying the show. And by all means, continually send in emails. You can contact us via Twitter these days.
Oh, really? That's wonderful.
Well, I've decided to try and get with technology a little bit. So if you have a Twitter account and you want to follow the tweets, and I try and post all of the Breaking Dad's Army news, and remarkably, there's quite a bit of it.
Yeah.
On Twitter, you just log on to www.twitter.com/Dad's Army Podcast. And if you want to comment on something that I post, then all you need to do is in your tweet, as I think the correct vernacular is.
I can't believe it is.
You type at Dad's Army Podcast, and that means I will pick up whatever it is that you post. I think that's about it for podcast 43. We've got through quite a bit, haven't we, Oliver?
We have indeed. I hope everyone's enjoyed listening to us, you know, rabbiting on about Dad's Army. Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Oliver, for joining us once again. Just a few things before we disappear. As I said already, make sure you send your feedback to us. That's james@dadsarmypodcast.com. We'll always get to it at some point. Now, some of the feedback we've gone through today was sent to us months ago, but we do get there in the end. We go through every piece of feedback we do receive. Keep an eye on the Dad's Army Podcast blog. That's dadsarmypodcast.blogspot.com. And again, you get some photographs of events. I post some what I consider to be interesting Dad's Army news stories on there. And there's all manner of things on there. There's interactive polls. Do check out the blog. And make sure you catch up with us In the next podcast, which will be out at some point in February, which I have a feeling will be a commentary episode this time on The Honourable Man.
Well, that sounds good.
Yes. Your favourite episode, isn't it?
It is one of my favourites. It is indeed.
Yeah, well, as I say, we'll look forward to recording that with you in the very near future.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward to it already.
I'm telling lies here, listener. We've recorded that one already. Anyway, lastly, just to say, thank you very much for listening. It's been great to have you with us over the last hour or so. Thanks again, Oliver, and we'll catch up with you soon.
We are the boys who will stop your little game. We are the boys who will make you think again. 'Cause who do you think you are giving, Mr. Hitler, if you think old England's done? Mr. Brown goes off to town on the A21, but he comes home each evening and he's ready with his gun. So who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think old England's done?
But we'll be drawing that competition on the next podcast. So keep your ears pierced to see whether... Keep your ears pierced. Get holes put in your ears.
Yeah.
No. Keep your ears peeled. Can you keep your ears peeled? Or do you have to keep your eyes peeled?
It's better than keeping them pierced.
No, never mind. Anyway, to keep... Fantastic pub. Had a huge marquee out the back. And unfortunately, it's burnt to the ground. There was some kind of electrical fault a few months ago. And if you've been there and you were hoping that you were going to return at some point, then unfortunately you won't be, because it's an absolute desolate wreck, I'm afraid. And it does seem to have a bit of a...
Sorry, that was just... I'm so sorry.
Is that really bad? It's all right. I'll put it on the end.